From multiple cooperative locations in Minneapolis or near enough, this is Nice Games Club, the show where nice game devs talk gaming and game development. I'm Ellen Burns Johnson, and I make nice games.
I'm Stephen McGregor, and I make nice games.
And I'm Arthur Croy, I too make nice games.
In this episode, we talk with Reese Valentine and Mackenzie Denker, founders of Amalore, to discuss worker-owned co-ops in the video game industry. And so, if everyone is ready, let's start. Yeah, so Reese and Mackenzie, you guys are joining us from two different locations.
Yep, I'm in Boston, and Reese.
Nearby Minnesota. Y'all in Minneapolis.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm glad to have y'all on, especially since this specific topic is relevant to me because I will be working for Future Club in a couple of weeks, maybe Woo-hoo. By the time this episode is out.
Possibly. Yeah, maybe.
We'll see.
maybe. Calendar math.
Yeah, I think I talked about it on a previous episode. But yeah, so I'll be working for Future Club, and Future Club is a worker-owned cooperative. So I'm going to be asking a bunch of questions that I probably should have asked during the interview process.
Don't worry, I'm your study buddy.
Yeah.
they'll tell you everything you need to know when you get there, too, I'm sure.
Yes.
But we can start the process off.
Yeah, yeah. Well, first thing I probably should have asked during the interview process, what is a co-op? Can you explain that to me?
Yeah, so the definition, online, we don't really like any of them that much for like co-op in general. What I kind of decided it was, and I mean, it's accurate, but it's like a simple definition is it's a co-op is based around democratic control and ownership. So that's what a co-op in general is. In terms of worker co-ops, it's worker owned and worker controlled. So each worker has an equal voting power and equal ownership. Anything you want to add to that, Reese?
Yeah, and equitable share of the profits.
Right.
That seems pretty key. Yeah.
Yeah, really it's democracy and making sure the profits aren't like being, you know, millions of dollars going to shareholders and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, we don't have to, but there's the seven cooperative principles that are, you know, you probably should at least mention them quickly. So there's voluntary and open membership, democratic member control, members' economic participation, autonomy and independence, education, training, and information, cooperation among cooperatives, and concern for community. So we'll dig into some of those stuff more later, but yeah, that's kind of like the what drives co-ops are those main points.
Yeah, cool. Set of values in common. What led you both to co-found Amalore as a co-op?
I mean, I was just like trying to get something going. And I was putting out
yeah,
feelers.
That's all you, Mackenzie.
Yeah, but I mean, Reese has been awesome for getting things actually going. I was like the one who was the first step, but then together we kind of made a good team of figuring it all out. But yeah, basically for me, I had been working at a company called Disbelief, which is a great place in Cambridge, Mass. They do a lot of contract work, and I learned a lot there. But I was just ready to, you know, kind of do my own thing and see what we could do and hopefully make the industry a little bit better through, you know, democratic control, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like a thing I'm really looking forward to with working with Future Club too, is like, I get to be a part of that action too, which is really neat. Yeah. Okay. So that makes sense. And like starting up the process of starting up a co-op, you know, getting people on your side on that, like what is that like? What was that like?
It's tough because it's still pretty new in the games industry. Like people, sure. It's been becoming a lot bigger. I know, like Glory Society, they've kind of been a big champion of it publicly. So I think everyone, when they hear what it actually is, they definitely are interested because it's all about sharing the profits and everything.
Yeah.
It's like any indie studio. It's tough when you're first starting because, you know, you have limited funding. You have an idea potentially. So trying to figure all that out. And kind of, you want to grow something with a group of people, but you also need something to get them interested in the first place. So kind of that combination is always tricky.
Yeah. And then like, it's very difficult for the average person because like, this is such an uncommon model to go with. I mean, people already like don't understand how business works, let alone a very unique, special business. So people aren't going to understand what it is necessarily. people who are like, who are a part of it, they understand that the average person doesn't know, and that there's like an education component to it. Like, I'm sure, Steven, that the people at Future Club are going to be like more than happy to like walk you through like all of this and just try to get you on the same page for like what the heck any of this means.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. They've been pretty great. Just like talking with them and stuff. They're very, they seem very accommodating in that way, in my ignorance.
I mean, they have to be.
Yeah.
It's one of the seven principles we just talked about. You know, it is about education. Like, people should need to understand what it means. And yeah, there's a lot of reasons why co-ops aren't as popular as they could be. I think we can talk about that, you know, a little later, but I think they're going to be getting bigger for sure.
Well, one thing I do know is that like co-ops don't, as far as I understand, they don't really scale well in terms of like, you know, how many employees you have. Like, can you have a co-op of 200 people? Like, is that feasible?
That's the big thing, is that everyone thinks co-op means you vote on every single decision. But you're really voting on the core business decisions, like about mergers, who's going to be, you know, acting as treasurer, those kind of things potentially. Okay. But you don't have to have a totally flat structure. That's, you know, there are companies that do that who aren't co-ops, and the companies that are co-ops that do it. But you don't have to have flat, and we don't want to have flat. I mean, right now there's only four of us, so we are flat, but
yeah,
you know, I think at a certain size, yeah, it's very hard to do that and not have invisible power structures that pop up. So yeah, you know, around 10 or 20 people, you know, that's when I think it's a little bit tough.
Sure.
Yeah. So like there are board members, and those board members are voted on. So the idea is that like the more like day to day, like decision making and votes that will have to happen, that's handled by the board members. So it's not like everyone at all times. So it's still like a little bit similar to a traditional company in that way, but only instead of it being like a random investor that doesn't work for the company, it's someone that you voted for that like you may even know personally because you work with them directly.
Right. Yeah. And we still plan on having like art leads, you know, different levels of artists, different levels of programmer, you know, producer, stuff like that.
Yeah. That makes it more clear to me. Yeah. Cause I was, before I, you know, applied for this position and stuff, I was under the impression that co-ops were a relatively flat structure. And to me, it didn't make sense that would work, because like, I did feel like naturally, people would, you know, they would end up feeling like there would be some form of a hierarchy, I think. But
yeah. What I've heard from like other like cooperatives talk about is that it's like flat, like for your board members, right? Like,
yeah,
like that's equal voting. And then like when you're voting on something big, like that's flat, that's equal voting. But anything where it's like, oh, you're like directly working on a project, like, you know, like trust your lead, like now it's different. Like the business decisions and the project decisions have different like structures to them.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yes. So the project decisions will be a little bit more like a traditional company that you're familiar with. Yeah. And I think it's especially important because like then you'll just get to the point where it's like the cis white men just like can just like be loud and dominate these like conversations. So like, you know, you hired these people for a reason. They're experts in what they're doing. Like, you have to trust your experts.
So with respect to Amalur, and I'm sure it's different for every co-op, but like with respect to Amalur, how are like new employees, how are new people being added into your business? You said you were four people strong at the moment. But I imagine potential expansion in the future.
Maybe to five.
Yeah. and I guess the first thing I would say is that, if you're hiring a contract for a specific thing, that's, you know, pretty average, but
yeah.
You said employees, like, no, like you can't think of these people that you're hiring as employees. Okay. You have to think of them as future business partners. Mm-hmm. You are investing in someone who will become an owner of this company with you. Mm-hmm. So you really have to think about it differently. So like, even like your interviews, like you can't just like assess the skills, right? Like you need to make sure that you have the same values, that like this person believes in the values of how the cooperative's functioning right now.
Okay.
Yeah, we literally did like a vision thing, which I think everyone should do, about, you know, what do we value as ourselves and also, you know, as a group. So we need to probably update that, but I think that was a really good process to go through.
Can I ask how that process went?
Yeah, so basically we all, like, you just kind of free write on your own. You might be on a call together, but you're just, you know, writing. And then everyone reads their, what they wrote down is what, you know, how they see themselves in 5 years or something. You know, personal life, business, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we just make sure we, you know, listen to each other's visions, make sure they line up, you know, that they're compatible. And then we also wrote like a company vision, which we need to, we haven't finalized it. It's like still in an early stage where like I wrote a draft, someone else wrote a draft, and we've like, you know, taken some of those pieces and then combined them together. That's basically what we have so far. We're not done yet. It's an ongoing process.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Sure. And I imagine like as you move forward, you might like reevaluate things and say like, we want more of this and less of this or something too.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's key that we, you know, co-ops in general are about, you know, community and stuff. But for me, it's key that we keep that in mind at all times and, you know, set aside part of our profits for community development. You know, if that means helping literally like local areas or helping other co-ops or other game devs, you know, just anything like that. So,
yeah, I like that a lot. That's very powerful. And like being able to work with a bunch of people that have shared goals and things means that like, even if there are disagreements and stuff, you're all working towards the same cause. And I think that like, you know, it helps put things in perspective in that way. Like when you're arguing for something, you're still both believing in the same thing. So
yeah, there's been plenty of arguments, but yeah, we've always been able to work through it because we have those big values together.
As parents sometimes say, we're not arguing, we're discussing.
Yeah.
Not only you want to make sure you're on the same page, but I feel like you need to be open to people joining and changing your direction a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like, I think that's pretty important. If you truly want to value like each voice, you need to be willing to like, okay, well, I'm going to consider this like seriously and maybe move in like a slightly different direction because of like this new person's perspective and knowledge.
That's what I was thinking about too. You know, like social structures, social systems can be self-reinforcing, and in like the corporate world where it's all hierarchy and you are mainly valued for the skills that you bring. I think it's easy for corporations who are in that kind of system, people who are in that kind of system, to overlook the fact that when you're hiring someone, you are hiring a person, and they will have an effect on the corporate culture, the organization's culture, and the people around them and their team and everything like that. But because the systems and expectations haven't historically been, you know, accommodating of that, that can sometimes be overlooked to the detriment of the team and the organization. But it sounds like from what you're describing, that's really baked into the structure and systems around creating and expanding your group of people who you're working with, your team, your collection of partners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that makes it honestly like safer, like by having that be more visible and upfront. Like, yeah, like you said, it's going to affect the company no matter what. Having it be more of a formal process and being talked about more, I think, is really useful.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it makes you like more adaptable too over time. Like, I think a lot of like, one of the issues that feels like a lot of gamers are complaining about is like AAA is making the same games all the time. And so like, you know, with a co-op and, you know, adding new people in and I suppose also it just being a smaller team helps with this too. But like, because of that, like you'll like start adapting to trends more quickly, than like AAAs who are scared of change, you know? So that's good.
We never really answered your question about how we onboard new members, though.
No.
So we probably should do that. So basically, like what we've seen is that most places do like a 6 month or maybe even a year time where you're kind of the new employee is not a co-owner yet. They're just an employee. And that's to make sure that they fit and then like it makes sense for them to join as an owner. And then at the end of that process, the board, or it could be the whole co-op, depending on where you work, they decide if it's a good fit or not.
Okay.
And that kind of really helps avoid the issue where you don't want to have the issue where you're like trying to be overly safe and not like bring on somebody just because you're not sure if they're going to fit, you know, but it also gives you that flexibility to say, okay, never mind. you know, it just, we're just not compatible. But we're still able to give them that chance and to, you know, pay them for their time.
Yeah, that's, I like that a lot, because, like, you know, the interview, somebody in an interview and somebody actually working for you are two different things. Like, somebody could do really well in an interview and, you know, kill it or whatever, but then, like, you hire them on and then they're working and it just doesn't work out. Like, maybe they don't quite mesh as well with your team as you thought they would, or, you know, maybe they just aren't quite getting the job done that they need to. Hopefully that's not the situation that I get into when I start. It probably won't be the case, but
have more faith in yourself.
I know. I do. We, I honestly
love and believe in you.
Oh, thank you, Reese. I do feel pretty confident, like, that I'll do a good job in my position, but
I guess that's, like, kind of like a benefit to cooperatives, is that you're joining as, like, you know, an owner. It's more serious than just an employee.
Right.
And your fellow, like, co-owners, they're going to want to make sure to invest in you as well. So it's like, you're not only, like, giving to this company, but also, like you can grow alongside these other people. And they, you know, presumably, like, everyone wants each other to stick around.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. I like that a lot. I know that co-ops are kind of complicated, right? So, but, like, why aren't there more co-ops in this space? I know that, like, some people are starting to move towards it, but
there's always ups and downs. I mean, it is harder to form. I mean, since it is less well known, it's more work to, you know, figure all that startup stuff out.
Sure.
That was definitely not an easy process. But the big thing is that it's just, I mean, they've been around for hundreds of years in the US, co-ops, you know, as, like, agricultural, but they've only been in certain industries. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that it's in the US, at least, we're, you know, we're like a very capitalist society, and, you know, that there's good and bad to that. But at its heart, co-ops are democratic, which is also an American thing, right? We like to value democracy. But they give so much power to the worker that I do think that it's been potentially a little, you know, buried, or maybe it's just that, you know, for one reason or another, people haven't heard of it. But it's not taught in school, right? You know, like, it's been around for hundreds of years. We weren't taught about co-ops in schools.
Yeah, I know. I wasn't.
Yeah, so, like, that's just part of it, is that until it becomes impossible to avoid knowing about them, you know, it's not going to be shouted from the rooftops, I think.
Sure. And I guess, like I said before, and like Oliver was saying before too, it doesn't scale well with larger teams. So, like, I don't know that, I mean, AAA takes up a lot of our industry. And so it makes sense that, like, they're not, I guess even in the indie space though, like, it's because not a lot of people know about it, and it's harder to set up and stuff.
I mean, you could have a AAA co-op. There's Mondragon is a company in, I think it's somewhere in Europe.
They're like,
I think Spain. There are thousands of people there, and it's a co-op. It's not necessarily, I don't know that much about, you know, how they run their operations. It might not be an ideal situation, but it is a co-op. It's like the biggest one in the world. Okay. And it's thousands of members large. So, you know, the biggest AAA, you know, studio is probably about that size. So it's not like it's impossible. It's just that someone has to give up power, you know, like,
yeah,
this, we concentrate power in these areas, and traditional companies just reinforce that. So until someone is willing to give up some money and some power and share that with other people, it's a lot harder for this to work out, because then the people who have less have to somehow survive long enough to make something and then become profitable, you know? So that's just a big thing there. So, I mean, I think we're starting to see some more grants and funding opportunities in general for games, for early games. I think that is a big help. That could help with that if there are co-ops getting those sources of funding.
Yeah, that brings to mind two things, and I'll talk about the second thing because it's smaller first. And that is, you know, not everyone has the emotional capital, I guess, for what it was, you know, for what it's worth, or the time, or just the situation where they're able to start something like that to kick it off, because, you know, it takes initiative and it takes energy from a person or people to get something like that rolling. Eventually you're going to get its own inertia, but to get something started takes a lot. And I think this might be something to do with the capitalist culture that we're in the US, but there's kind of the default thinking is if you're going to put that work in, you should be getting something out of it as a business owner.
Yes.
So you have to, you know, to do something that requires that kind of energy to get that rock rolling, and then not capitalize upon that requires, I think, some a certain set of values, which you've described, and then also a pretty high degree of self-knowledge to understand like that's what you want and why, and be able to follow through with that. So
yeah, because it's seen as such a risk, and it is a risk. And if you want to have a reward for that risk. Mm-hmm. For me, the reward is, you know, the company itself, and hopefully, you know, helping things out. And it's not like you don't get any reward. You still get, you know, the money you put in, and you're actually getting a pretty good deal. You know, we have, so part of co-ops is patronage dividends. So mm-hmm. you could put as much as 50% or 80% of your profits that you make directly back to your members. So, you know, it's like you're all making good money if you end up being really successful. It's not like you're not. Yeah. You just won't be a billionaire.
Yeah. And I think, you know, partly what you were talking about the idea of a co-op not necessarily being something that people think about starting when they're thinking about starting an organization is because it's more specific to certain industries. And the three co-ops that come to mind immediately for me are like the local grocery co-op that, you know, you can go get crazy weird stuff at because that's what the members have voted for. There's an amazing restaurant, Hard Times, that's a co-op that's in Minneapolis. And then the other one that comes to mind is REI, which is a huge organization. But I don't think I'm not sure exactly how their co-op structure works, but they're not, none of those are like creative agencies or companies.
Yeah, those are consumer co-ops. So if I'm understanding correctly, I'm not an expert on co-ops in general, but basically like, they still get to vote, I think, on some stuff, but there are different classes of members for some of these co-ops. So you could have like employee members versus consumer members, and those would have different rights and different returns on investment. So.
Yeah. I think Hard Times is employee owned. I know that's not the right word, but I think that's owned by the people who work there. But still, like it's such a different organization, a different industry than I'm going to create a co-op so that we can make video games together. You know, it's just so different that I think without someone explicitly telling me, someone being you guys explicitly telling me this can work in the video game industry, I never would have put two and two together until it became more popular. Hey guys.
Hello.
Hi.
So we sometimes talk about, well, every episode we mention all the different ways you can get in touch with Nice Games Club and participate and find resources and post memes and stuff.
Yes.
And one of those ways that we mention frequently every episode mm-hmm. is the Discord channel that we have.
Yeah.
And I just wanted to share a little bit more about what's going on with that as of late. And we had a new listener join the Discord channel Ooh. This week, and that was pretty cool.
That's fun.
Yeah, and I really liked the conversation that kind of that this person generated, because they came into the channel and they said, hey, I'm just starting to listen to the show. What are some of the best episodes that I should start with? Which is a great question to ask, because there are hundreds of episodes.
Yeah. Got a backlog.
Yeah. Well, and you know, it was really cool. As we, you know, I'm sure that we three all have our favorites. I actually don't know if I do. There's so many. There are hundreds of episodes.
Yeah.
But you know, some of the other listeners chimed in and mentioned some of the things that they'd really liked listening to, and posted links to the episode pages on the website. And that was really cool. So just wanted to mention that and describe it a little bit, because I think that's just a good taste of what you can be a part of on the Discord. And if you have been listening to the show for a long time, or if you're new, stop on by and tell us about it in the chat.
Yes.
And also, you know, we're going to try to post some more things and questions and topics for people to discuss in the coming weeks. So come and participate and tell us your thoughts and tell us about what you're playing, what you're making, and what you're drinking, I guess.
I believe the link is nicegames.club/discord. Is that correct, Mark?
Nicegames.club/discord. Is that correct?
Yeah, that sounds right to me. Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Nicegames.club
Discord.
Ellen, is that correct?
Is it?
Yes. Yes.
Steven's word is law.
Okay. All right.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Well, okay. Well, let's talk about your first project, the project you're working on now. So you're developing this as a cooperative. How did you go about that? Like, how did you design the game? How are you developing the game as a co-op team?
So I had the original idea, and then it's kind of evolved as we brought people on. We kind of all have our roles aren't super distinct at this point since we're so small.
Sure.
But, I am like the writer right now, but we're going to bring on another writer. Reese is the producer and community manager as well. Since we're so small, it's still pretty informal, but I think as we grow, we'll definitely want to solidify some of those roles.
Yeah, I would say it's probably really similar for like outside of co-ops, just like any like brand new project, like made by a brand new team. There is like a little bit of like awkwardness to it. Like you don't have this formal structure yet. Like you have to start somewhere. You have to get people interested somehow, right? So like you tell them about like your idea and this project, and then people like get on board with you. It's a little bit awkward. Like we're not at that point where like we're deciding our next project. That's gonna be a very different process than like your first project.
Sure. And I like how you phrase that it's similar to other you know, development studios, because it really is. When you add somebody onto the team, they shape the game, regardless of who they are, just because of who they are. And so, like, it really doesn't matter whether, your business structure supports that or not. It's just going to really be the case. I think that's good to, to have, to recognize that either way, it's going to be the case.
Yeah, I was hoping we could dive into, we're actually kind of pivoting into this topic right now, but I was really hoping we could dive into the details of this difference between the business decision structure that you're talking about and the project decision structure. And to give you a little bit of a background about why this is so interesting to me is I have training as a Scrum Master. My husband is a Scrum Master. And one of the things that you study a lot in the process of becoming a Scrum Master and in your practice as one is how teams make decisions in the service of getting stuff done. And to me, the dynamic that I would expect, if you're going to compare the two, is a project has a start and an end, right? Like you start it, you're conceiving of the idea, and then it ends, and then you ship it. And then there's some stuff you do afterwards, but like the team is not going to be, the team of supporting it long-term might be different than the team that actually brings it to life.
Right.
Versus the business, you want that to be ongoing. So it makes sense that you have completely different decision-making structures because your goal is something different. Like your goal in making a game is to ship that game and to make it a hit. Your goal in making a business is to make it sustainable and healthy and fun and a great culture and so on and so forth. They're different games or they're different end goals. And so they're going to require different decision-making structures. And I know you guys are just getting started, but I'm curious to hear the details of how those things differ and why you set them up differently and how that's playing out.
So definitely was already mentioned that business decisions even tend to be like flat. Not completely flat always, right? We have board members for that reason, like to decide like day-to-day stuff. But then like very important larger decisions do go out to all members. I think a good question there is like, well, what decisions are board member decisions?
Mm-hmm.
And that actually is written in like bylaws, like by these co-ops and corporations in general. So like it is a little bit different for each kind of organization. Like one of the things that you'll vote on is like budget. You could decide it goes to all members, or you could keep it within board members and then split it up, like have it be, okay, the final budget is approved by everyone. So the, it's all about like what decision is board members versus members, and like you can decide like the genres of that.
Okay. How are, can you give some examples of how you guys have structured it for you, or what you're thinking of as you're expanding a little bit?
You mean for like the business side or for the project side or both?
We're kind of still talking about the business side. So yeah. Just some, maybe a couple examples of things that you guys have categorized as decisions that can be made by a board versus decisions that need to be made by everyone collectively. You mentioned budget as one, and I assume that's outlined somewhere.
Yeah, so like bringing on new members, I think we decided was the board. Is that right, Bruce?
Some
of the stuff, yeah. So basically, like you can have board or full member, and it depends on, do you want to bother everyone with this decision? Is it something that affects everybody, right?
Yeah.
At a certain size, you don't want to be, like if you're a team of 200, you don't really want everyone having a vote on a new member, right? Because... Mm-hmm. Like at that point, they're not all going to have a chance to get to know them that well. It could be, you bring in their team that they worked with if we're doing like the 6 month, end of evaluation time. You could bring in their team, talk to their team. But at the end of the day, it's not a decision that everyone has enough information on to decide well at a certain size. So I think it's really about as you scale. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. And like Amler's in like that awkward, ugly duckling stage of things. There's only four of us, so it's like it's pretty easy for all of us to meet the person, and like we can all vote on new members. But what really helps with business structure decisions, where it's like, okay, well this decision would make sense to have more people involved, but we have too many people to just be like member vote committees. There are actually, it's pretty common for co-ops to have like an onboarding committee or like new deciding whether or not like, transition from just an employee to a worker owner. So like you expand the pool a little bit larger, and then you leave it up to this committee to make final decisions.
Right.
And I think that really helps for business structure things where it's like, you want to keep yourself flexible as time goes on and like your needs change.
Yeah. And you might not have a CEO. Like you can have a CEO as a co-op. I mean, they still report to the board and everything. And they might make a lot of day-to-day decisions, but you also could have a committee, of a few people that are making those decisions, or the whole board if you really wanted to. The idea is that you have these specialized groups that, it's a lot, it is more overhead, but it's also better in some ways to not have one person making all those decisions when they might not have the full context that you need to make them as best as they could.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. I mean, I think a lot of executives need to sometimes, they find themselves in positions where they need to coach themselves to take more time and learn from the people around them. It's kind of, I think, partly just the dynamics of a role like that, where you're expected to make fast decisions that you end up making them a bit too quickly.
Right.
So that makes sense, kind of an aside, but well let's contrast that with then the structures that you're using on a specific project, how you're making decisions, right? So everyone's shareholder, some people are board members, but you find yourself on a project and your roles on that project are maybe more specific, and there's a different dynamic at play. So what does that look like?
Well, it's important to, like, we have right now a vice president and a president, me and Reese. And I'm also treasurer, and they are also secretary/clerk was the word we used.
A lot of roles.
Yeah. We both have two roles, which is a lot, because Erica didn't want to be involved at that level. Like she was comfortable, being a founding member, but she wanted to be more focused on the projects, not as much on the business side. And even at our small size, we're trying to accommodate that. So she still has a say, and she still participates in certain meetings that she has, that she cares about, and that we need her to care about. But she's not doing necessarily as much as we are, we still are delegating as, you know, as president, or we are taking on certain things as president, vice president, et cetera. Versus as like a project level, like Erica is our art lead. So she's more in control of figuring out, you know, the style, getting that art Bible together, deciding on how we're going to build certain things. She has a pretty cool background. She can do some technical art as well. So that's kind of how it differs, I guess, in that situation, where even at our small size, it's very flexible and fluid, but we have, like, we're in charge business side, you know, more so for various reasons, but she has more control. Eric has more control over the art direction. We obviously all have a say for all this stuff since we're so small, but that's just kind of how it's going already.
And then, of course, your project lead right now. This is your, it started as your baby, and then you've shared it with others.
Right. And we're looking into taking on another project potentially, which might have a different project lead, you know, already. So, you know, it's already kind of adapting and changing.
Y'all are already booming, it sounds like.
And yeah, I think this is where it's like really fun for me to think about, because I mean, business structures are more like, I don't want to say set in stone, but there's like a pipeline you can follow of like, okay, well, I think this issue needs a committee now. It's like, oh, this is a board member thing. But it's like projects, that's different. That's like, we're still so new that like we don't have it fully figured out. I have like dreams of like how this all can come together. I'm not ashamed to say part of it might be I saw an anime and was like, that's adorable. I love that idea. I really like the idea of really like letting like anyone like pitch and being like, oh, I think this is a project we should do. I'm not sure if it's like on the business end of this is like a board member decision. This might be a board member decision to be like, yes, we will, Emily will now work on this next project. Mm-hmm. But now that person is like the project lead. Like they pitched their idea, now they're project lead. And like that really excites me. I like that idea a lot. Mm-hmm. Because generally like these companies are very set in stone. Yeah. Like, if like you will always be like gameplay lead and this will always be what you do. Or it's like you are the like animator and this is like all you will ever get to do, or producer, whatever. So it really excites me to have like a company that's like, oh, you're a producer, you pitched a game, we freaking love it, we vote yes. Now you're the like you're not now you're a creative director on this project.
Yeah.
And like that's like my dream situation to have like on the project side. And then this person would be like, okay, well, Mackenzie, like you just wrapped up our last project. Can you be gameplay lead and help me with game design or whatever? And then like you decide your team from there. So that's like my dream for project stuff. We're still too baby to like really make those decisions yet. But yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Baby Pokemon, right. You haven't evolved into your final form.
Yeah, we haven't evolved yet.
I really like that. That sounds really cool too, because like when you're project lead on a thing, you're not just project lead forever too.
Yeah.
So like, mm-hmm, yeah, you can just support other people sometimes. Like if you've got a passion thing, like I've talked about Sledgehammer Bride on this show, maybe I'll pitch that to Future Covenant, you know, down the line.
Well, that's fascinating, because what it also lets people do is continue to grow and experiment with different things in their career within the same organizational culture, right? So I know, I mean, we hear about this, like big studios will have a project and then the game ships and then people get fired, you know, like the things over go away or people quit, because the role that they've been serving is essentially over. And because their role was completely tied in with their place at that organization, once the role no longer serves, they don't have a place. This is different. And it acknowledges that those two things can be treated separately. And I think I'm really excited to see how you guys play with that.
Yeah, me too. I mean, that's kind of a reason why I wanted to do this in the first place, because I wanted to have more different hats and not all at the same time, but at least to be able to try them on. I think kind of going off this, I think this also relates back to the whole management situation, where the board and people and the president, vice president, et cetera, those are all rotating roles as well. So, you know, you might be like a lead QA and president, or you might be, you know, a mid-level artist and be treasurer for a few years. It really, it can create some interesting combinations there. And I think having that turnover, having people get a chance to have more of a direct say, mm-hmm. is a good way to make it more democratic as well.
Yeah, you have a term limit, you know, like, I actually forget the exact years right now. I have to reread our bylaws.
2 or 3 years, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, you can't just be like president forever. Like someone else will have to step in.
Yeah. Yeah, but you'll still be involved. You know, it's still, you're still there as a shareholder and you will have a role there and you're going to continue to contribute to the success of the whole tribe. So that's like a big thing to think about if I were ever to join or start a co-op. What are like big things people should really think about if they are looking into starting their own co-op?
Like any business, when you're a small business, you have to worry about burnout and overworking yourself. And I think that's something that is kind of just innate with starting a company, right? You're gonna feel more autonomy and maybe more incentive to work more and maybe more than you should. So I think thinking about that and also thinking about how you want to take care of your fellow, you know, owners. I think basically being aware of those pressures that we're going to have and thinking of how we're going to not overwork ourselves, you know, get stuff done, but, you know, take care of each other and ourselves.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I guess my second thing would be that generally when like you're an indie, you're like, I want to work on this project. I have a feeling that like the business considerations aren't really being done, right? It's all about the project and like what you're working on and stuff. Whereas like a co-op, like it sucks, capitalism sucks, but you do need to make those considerations and you need to make considerations for like what are you going to do in the future? Like this isn't just like a temporary arrangement. You're making some pretty like important, like it doesn't have to be set in stone necessarily, but I mean, you don't want to be firing your co-owners like every other year. Mm. Like that's an awful situation to be in.
Right.
So you really need to put in a lot of thought. You need to be like, this is what you need to know what you want. You need to have a feeling for what you're going to want in the future. What you want this company to be like. So like that's just like a lot of consideration and self-reflection that you really need to do to be fair to the people around you.
Which is part of why I fight so hard for reduced hours. Like we work a 35-hour work week, and the idea or less depending on how much we're able to handle right now. But the idea is that when you're working so hard, you can't self-reflect. You can't take the time to figure out what you need right now. I know I can't at least. So having the time to do that hopefully should make our company stronger long term because we're able to figure out what we need and what we need as a company.
I think that makes a lot of sense too. Like what both of y'all are saying. Like I think that, like when you are adding somebody on, like preferably long term. It's not really something you can't just have somebody on and then they decide to leave 2 years later because it's like it's a more complicated part of it.
I mean, so they can still leave 2 years later.
Oh well, yeah, just, but I mean, yeah. You don't. I don't know. It's.
We would love for them to
nice
stay forever.
Yeah.
But it's, we're not like going to force you to stay. You know.
Well, right.
It definitely.
You're not planning for Trump.
Every member that leaves is a huge. It when you're small, it's a huge deal for sure.
Right.
But we also want to be able to build sustainably and have fallback plans so that this person leaves, we hire someone else. We don't just like struggle along. Or, we adapt as we can.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you for clarifying that. Because, I guess I'm glad I missaid what I was trying to say.
I don't want anybody to feel pressure to stay because you feel like you have to. You know? It's just that hopefully you'll want to stay because you'll have more control over the whole process.
Yeah. Right. And that's why the process, adding somebody in is so involved and so important is because, you want people to stay. You want them to build, you want them to build the co-op to be a better thing. So it makes a lot of sense that it is the case. That's good. Can I ask how what Amalur's values are?
I should pull those up, yeah.
Yeah. Sorry to put you on the spot, but I was just curious because like I mean I have an understanding on future clubs, and I imagine that just due to the structure and how y'all are describing things and how I've heard Future Club people talk about, like, Future Club. I imagine there's a lot of a lot of in common with your.
Yeah.
Oh, this has nothing to do with it. You're in two clubs. Okay. Anyway, sorry. Most disconnected thing possible to say right now.
I am.
But
in two
I was
clubs.
Just like, oh my god.
So we're planning on making our bylaws, which is like our kind of our government agreement that we have, like that governs how we basically act as a co-op. We're planning on making that public as soon as we get our lawyers to decide or help us figure out what we can say and what we can't say, you know, so we're working on that. But in our bylaws, we have what we aim to do and what our core values are. So I can read those off. Hopefully I don't butcher them. So the cooperative aims to 1, make video games and other forms of art, entertainment, and creative works to be sold. 2, raise up underprivileged voices and communities through education, access, and monetary support. 3, to make art, technology, and nature accessible to as many people as possible. And 4, to preserve nature and make the world a better, more beautiful place. So that's what we aim to do. I can read the values too, if that's something we want to do.
Yeah, go.
Sure. So our core values, craft with the heart, mind, and soul, create art thoughtfully, emotionally, and with integrity, while taking into account the broader context in which it will be experienced. Amelioration. Improvement should never have an end goal. Seek out new ways to grow and help guide each other along new journeys. 3, expand the common lore, honoring the traditions of every culture while opening eyes to new ideas. 4, service to the global community and to each other. And 5, sustainability, both economic and environmental. We operate for long-term balance. So that's it.
That's really good. And I think that will be helpful for listeners too. Like, if they're thinking about making co-ops, maybe you should think about making co-ops. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. but if they're thinking about it, then, like, you know, they can see those values and evaluate what they want from a co-op. And if maybe your values make sense for them, maybe some of them, you know, could be tweaked to work better for what they want and things like that. So I think that, I think having that, seeing that, and really having all of that stuff public and having all of that stuff available is so good too, because, like, you can, helps you make decisions.
Yeah, I mean, we base all of our original documentation or all of our original bylaws off of other people's that were public. You know, it's all, that's what it's all about. And all of our values and stuff, that's based off of mostly those 7 core values that we have as, you know, as a co-op has to have. But we just wanted to specifically call out certain things that we were even more passionate about.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I noticed that, like, both of your statements brought up a lot of in terms of, like, sustainability and environmentalism. Can you speak a little bit more up to that, like, that end?
I mean, I just love nature, and I feel like, you know, we wouldn't be here without it, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we've already taken, like, the super small step of our server providers are one of the ones that, like, plants trees for every amount. Like, basically, it's net zero for the amount of energy it uses. So just taking that small step, if you have the option, do that kind of stuff. And then, you know, once we start, once we release a game and start having some money, we actually can start spreading around the ideas to support causes directly that we care about.
Yeah, well, I mean, and that's also good too, because, like, you know, you're putting money where your mouth is.
Yeah.
So where are you? I mean, this is like pie in the sky, perhaps. This is further than I would recommend anyone plan. As a Scrum Master, I would never say plan this many years out. But since we're reaching, where do you guys want to be in 5 years? What are you hoping to see Amalur do and be able to achieve, broadly speaking?
You want to start, Reese?
Yeah. I think it would be cool to expand outside of video games. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how that would, like, even work or whatever, but what if one of us wants to make, like, a comic a part of Amalur? I think that sounds, like, really freaking cool. Mm-hmm. I love games, but, like, you know, having the flexibility to, like we can be more than just games. Like, we can just be a general, like, artist studio. And I'm like, ooh, that sounds cool.
Yeah.
I guess I want, like, I guess this, like, goes, this will tie into games as well, but, like, I want us to make, like, really drastically different things. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to be like, oh, okay, this is an Amalur game. I want it to be like, you guys really make different stuff whenever you feel like it. Like, I think, which I know that's, like, not, like, a great marketing decision necessarily, because your audience is going to be divided between, like, what they enjoy and, like, oh, this is just not my thing. But it, like, it'll let people make what they want to make. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I mean, that sounds exciting too.
Yeah. I think that's why the reason I get along is that I have the same vision of having it be more than just games. I have a lot of, you know, hobbies that I enjoy, some of which aren't relevant, but other ones, like, I like to write, you know, I like to do music stuff. And that's why games are cool. They do all that stuff together in one package, but not everything needs to be this huge, big conglomeration of ideas. It could just be like somebody has this small little novel they want, like, maybe a novel's too big, you know, novella, or like mm-hmm. a song they want to put out, and they're comfortable putting it under the Amalur umbrella, and we think it, you know, fits our very wide value system, then I think it could be cool to put stuff out under that umbrella.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to, everything needs to be very queer. Everything?
I mean, definitely some stuff.
I will respect your straightness, sorry. It would be cool to have, like, a lot of, like, just, like, be yourself, right?
For sure.
Or it's, like, if we have, like, another person come in that's, like, I really care about, like, my culture and, like, my background and, like, yeah. I want people to be able to express themselves beyond, like, infuse it with who you are.
Yeah.
Yeah, it should be a community, and everyone should have, you know, be able to put themselves into that community for sure.
You want the people who are making the thing to come through in the thing.
100%. Yeah.
Yeah.
Personal stuff. Yeah. But yeah. Besides that, for me, I think it'd be really cool to have some kind of physical presence, like there's art galleries everywhere. It'd be cool to have a video game gallery where, you know, connect to people who aren't playing the kind of games we're necessarily making all the time, and make some games that are more, you know, anybody can just pick it up, you know, phone game, some kind of VR installation, AR, you know. I think it'd be really cool to kind of raise awareness in that way and get people thinking about different possibilities. I know I've been kind of inspired by the Boston game dev scene in that way. Like, there's been a lot of cool stuff in that area, in our scene.
Where can people find you on the internet?
Yeah, we are Amalur_co-op on Twitter and Instagram, and then maybe some Twitch streams will be coming. We're still organizing that.
Okay.
And then there, our website is amalur.coop.
Cool. Well, thank you again for being on the show. You definitely put my mind at ease, because I was like, oh, I don't exactly know how co-ops work. Is this going to work?
What if I got myself into?
Yeah, no, but it sounds like this is going to be amazing, and I didn't think it was possible, but I'm even more excited to be working for Future Club. So
that's awesome.
Thank you so much.
I mean, it's awesome being here. I'm glad you guys let us participate.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, and we'd love to have you back on, you know, in the next several months to kind of check in to see how things are going, because I'm sure as you're getting things started, things will move really quickly. So
there will be. You can check in on Steven.
Yes, that's
I. I can interview Steven.
Oh boy.
Ask him, yeah, be like, hey, new co-op person. How's that going, buddy?
I'm sure I'll have a lot to talk about.
That's our show. Check out our website, nicegames.club, for show notes and links to resources on today's topics. We'd love to hear your thoughts on this episode and on our programming in general. Go to nicegames.club/feedback and tell us what you think. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter at @NiceGamesClub, where Dale tweets about game dev resources and... what will it be this time? Penguin's excited for a cuddle.
It's good. It's penguins. I love penguins. That's all I have to say.
Excited penguins.
Yes.
Or you can email us through contact@nicegames.club. Want to support the show? There are many ways to do so. Give us a review on your favorite podcast app. Tell your friends about your favorite episodes. Join us on Discord by visiting nicegames.club/discord. Actually, we just had a conversation on Discord about people's favorite episodes, so yeah. And also, we're on Patreon. As a patron of the show, you'll enjoy bonus content, extra jokes, and more. Sign up at patreon.com/nicegamesclub.
Someone else has to do this outro. It's really lagging battery right now.
Play nice.
And make nice.
Are you muted, Mark?
I think he's lagged.
He's lagging. Ah, dang. Okay.
We'll cut it in afterwards. Yeah. So maybe you just do play nice, Steven, and then okay. I'll do it and make nice.
Yes.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.